Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kipling Editors, and I'm glad she's here, too. We've missed her. She's been gone a couple of weeks, and but she's back now to talk to us about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days, in our world, our Main Street world. Joan Pride, welcome back, and I mean that literally.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Glad to be back.
It's good to have you back. We missed you.
Well, I missed you desperately.
I know that. I know you do whenever you're away. We're glad you're back. We appreciate Jim Ostroff sitting in for you. He always does a great job.
Absolutely.
Joan, of course, some of the things that we're going to talk about today were written before the election happened.
So we have
to point out that
right.
There's a couple of things that we're going to talk about today that we'll have to temper a little bit, because it turns out they were you know how publications go, folks. Sometimes you lose some. They have to go ahead and get things out. You know, it's like the newspaper that predicted that Dewey would win the election in, was it 49 or something like that?
Yeah, ouch.
Whatever that was. Anyway, this is one thing that should be pretty safe, Joan, and that's about the economy. You guys say the economy is improving, but even though it doesn't feel like that all the time, right?
Right. I mean, we kind of go through a lot of upward forces, but there's also downward forces as well.
Let's talk about some of the upward forces.
Oh, good. We get to talk about the good news first.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. Well, I don't know if you consider this good news, but the stimulus is keeping things going and pumping money into the system.
It gave us a good third quarter.
Pardon me?
It gave us a good third quarter.
It did.
All the clunker stuff, you know, housing and cars.
Right, right.
They gave us a third quarter, which is good for the national psyche, but doesn't always help that many individuals.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, not across the board.
Right.
Anyway, so the federal stimulus did some things, and I have to say, Joan, I actually know some people who are contractors who are getting some money out of the federal stimulus, but they're just sort of, they're not mainstream contractors. You know what I mean? They're not construction guys. They're sort of technology guys serving municipalities, things like that. They're kind of a little bit esoteric, but there is money getting out there.
Well, that's good.
So that's part of what you're talking about there.
Yeah.
And that keeps people working.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely.
Inventories.
Now, the next thing we say is inventories that will need more replenishing. And I think the real point here is that inventories are low because demand is picking up.
Joan, inventories are maybe at an all-time low.
Good. Well, you know.
When I talk to my economist experts, my economists on the show, time after time after time for months now, they continue to report that inventories are down. I mean, people are really, really operating lean and mean out there. Small businesses, big businesses,
right?
And so, I mean, people are really not stocking up at all, which is bad news at the moment, Joan. But if there's anything that could cause the economy to take a little bit of a jump, it'll be when people start believing that they can replenish and start stocking up a little bit.
Right.
Because we've really gone deep. And we've already paid. This is one thing about it, Joan. We've already paid the bill on inventory, the inventory drawdown.
Sure.
We've already paid that bill, folks.
Yep.
So that's a good thing for the future. It hasn't been good for the last several months.
Yep.
Last year or so, but it's for the future. It's going to be a good thing. Go ahead. Next thing.
Well, and exports are on the way up.
Yep, and that's partially because of the dollar, right?
Absolutely.
The dollar's down, and so exports are. I saw something recently, Joan, that part of the problem Toyota is having is they have a strong yen. against the dollar.
Right. And well, and I was just reading about how other countries are getting upset about this, that the low dollar is doing wonders for us, but it's not helping their economy.
Right. But the low dollar also creates other issues for us as a nation.
That's true.
You know, one of the things that a lot of people, and Joan, you being our currency expert, you know all about this, but...
shows how desperate you are.
but the thing is that the U.S. dollar... You know, that's a brand, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that a global brand among countries, among central banks, the top brand, the Coca-Cola, the Nike, the Cadillac, the Rolls-Royce of brands from the monetary world has been the dollar.
Right.
And that brand is tarnished a little bit now.
Yeah, it is.
And there are some issues there.
Yeah.
And Joan, the truth is our country has a lot at stake in that brand.
No question.
On many levels, on an emotional level, an intangible level, but also on a very tangible level, like what we're talking about right now with the exports.
Right.
So there's a lot at stake there.
Oh yeah.
my friend Bob McTeer, who was just on the show yesterday, what was it? He likes to quote Saint Augustine, who used to say, "Give me virtue, but not quite yet." You know, he says America's always, for the last few years, we've said, "Give me a strong dollar, but not quite yet."
Yeah, right.
And because, you know, as much as we worry about it, it actually does. There actually are some advantages to it.
It does.
But not for people like you, Joan, who like to vacation in the south of France every year. You're having to. It costs you a lot more money when you do that, doesn't it? Because your exchange rate's
not too
good.
Well, I've had to curtail trips on my private jet, too.
Exactly. That's been a problem, too, I know. Low interest rates. That's good, right?
Well, and we've also just had news from the Fed that they, you know, left rates the same, and they've indicated that they're not going to be raising anytime soon.
They're apparently not worried about inflation, and that's good news, Joan.
Yeah, that's great news.
I don't think anybody's saying we're not going to have inflation. I think they're just saying that's an alligator we don't have to worry about today.
Today, right? Yes.
I think they're feeling like that. You know, the Fed is always always positioned between two alligators, Joan.
One
of them is inflation alligator, and the other one is the deflation alligator.
And they always seem to get chomped on, don't they?
They do. But I think that they might be thinking that they're just a little bit closer to the deflation alligator than the inflation alligator.
Well, that's great for home buyers and other folks.
And that's my Jim Blasingame simpleton way of explaining why the Fed does what they do. And anyway, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Right back. More to come after these messages. Stay with us. Little Booker T and the MGs. This is called Green Onions. I like this song from the Wayback Machine. 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, your host and your disc jockey, spinning a few platters for you and a little bit of information about what's going on in the world these days from our good friends at the Kiplinger Letters. And Joan Pride is here. She's representing them. She's senior editor over there. Joan, we're talking about some of the we got a couple of positive things to talk about the economy before we move on. And we just talked about low interest rates. And boy, howdy, are they low. I mean, Joan, they're historically low.
Yeah.
Quarter prime rate. And I still don't understand this, Joan. Any from 0 to 0.25%. I don't know who the from 0 folks are. But let's just say it's 0.25%.
Okay.
That makes prime 3.25%.
Wow.
That makes, even for small businesses, who have to pay...
Prime plus
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You know, let's say that there's someone in the middle is prime plus 4. That's still only 7.25%.
Not bad.
We can handle that.
Yeah.
We can handle that.
If you can get the, you know, if banks are willing to
they
open
are,
their wallets.
They are, Joan. Let's dispel this. Let's get this squished. Let's bring this myth out on the table and cut its head off right here on the show. If you are a small business owner and you want to borrow money and you have the credit worthiness to borrow money, you can do that today.
You can find it?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
And if you can't, let me know. Now, now here's the thing, Joan. If you're a small business owner and you want to speculate on a commercial site and build a building on speculation, that ain't happening. Forget about that.
Forget about that.
But if you want to borrow money to grow your business, and you can justify it with a model that makes sense, which we've always needed to be able to do, the money is there. Bankers are telling me that they don't have a problem. The independent community banks, not the big banks.
Right. No,
big banks, they still got problems.
No way.
But the small banks are telling me, we got money. The problem we got is small businesses aren't asking us for money.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Why?
Because, well, there are a couple of reasons. Number one, they're running tight. They're running very, very tight.
Right.
They don't want to add any more debt to their balance sheet right now. And with sales the way they are for a lot of companies, they don't have to, even though they'd like to be able to take advantage of some upgrades, they're not going to be able to do that. So that's one reason. The other thing is because of the economy, they may think that they are not qualified for a loan.
Oh, yeah.
And they very well may not be.
Well, that's true too.
See.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a circular reference here.
Yeah.
It's a vicious cycle, but the point is that don't let anybody tell you that banks aren't loaning money to small businesses, because they are if they want it and if they qualify for it.
Yeah.
But that's the good news, because that means when the sales start picking up, we're going to have this renewed relationship with our bankers.
Right. That's so important.
Yeah. Now, pick up in housing construction, what's that all about?
Well, we're saying because of the interest rate situation, and, you know, you've got this first-time homebuyer credit that it's, you know, almost a lock that it's going to be extended and even expanded a little bit, we think that new home starts will keep rising.
Right. Well, new home starts. Now, that's interesting. I think, wouldn't we just like to have new home sales, not necessarily starts?
Yeah, I'm not sure why we use the term starts.
Yeah, the starts to me is problematic. Yeah. I think that's not the next baby step, Joan.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think new home sales are the first baby step.
Sure.
And then starts, because Joan, of course, you got to throw out Florida, Orange County, California, Phoenix, Las Vegas. You got maybe even Atlanta. You got to throw those out right now, but the rest of America still has some inventory, and I do believe though, Joan, that that's where the starts are going to come from.
Yeah.
From flyover America.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the good news, Joan.
Yeah.
And now there's some other good news, Joan, that I want that you guys didn't report on.
Okay.
And because I want to make sure we get as much good news out as we can, because we do have some bad news.
Okay.
Small businesses are going to lead this economy out of what it's in right now.
Oh,
small businesses are leading us out.
Of course.
And here's one of the reasons why, Joan, and I'm breaking this to you right now.
I can't wait.
The way customers are wanting to be treated these days, the control that they are able to have right now over the relationship with businesses is increasing every day. And that's good news for small business, because we're the best at being close to our customers. And so I think that we'll see an increased influence by small businesses on the growth of this economy. And the companies that will be left to do that, the ones that will have survived, are going to be lean. They're going to be running their operations very tight. They're going to know what it takes to survive, so therefore they're going to know what it takes to thrive. And I think the next few years, as tough as they're going to be as this economy gradually recovers, I think that it's going to be a great time to be a small business owner in the next 5 years.
Well, and the reason is people aren't just desperate for good customer service. They don't even think it exists anymore. So that when they get it,
that's right,
they just fall in love.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And the thing is the way they're demanding customer service though, Joan, is through the communities that are being built right now between customers and businesses.
Right.
And big businesses aren't as good. They just by structure and by definition aren't that good at building communities the way small business owners
are.
That's
right, yeah.
And it's just, I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about anybody. It's just the way it is. And so this is an exciting time. When we come back, we got some of the challenges that we got to work through that Kiplinger reports this week after these messages. 29 after, I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. She was a bebop baby on a hard day's night. She was hanging on, Johnny. We was holding on.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably... You know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure to continue to be with you. You're going to be glad you stayed with us because we got our good friend Joan Pride back. She's still with us, and as always, and as she has been now for all these years. And Joan, you got an 11th anniversary coming up in January.
I do?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
How about that?
Wow.
And we've got a 12th anniversary coming up week after next.
Gee.
How about that?
I can't believe it.
I know it. And of course, I'm so glad we were able to get you when you were only 15. Hey, Joan, we're talking about some of the challenges that we've been talking about, some of the things that are positive about the economy.
Right.
And Joan, even though the economy is in recovery, the recession technically is over, as they technically define it. But the elements that the residual... The collateral damage of recessions is still with us.
That's right.
And the mother of all collateral damage is unemployment.
You bet.
And that's the big 800-pound gorilla in the living room that we got to talk about. And that's approaching 10%. I've seen some figures that shows that it's as much as 17 million people who are either unemployed or underemployed.
Wow.
So that's pretty significant, and yeah. It's gonna and I think we are gonna have this jobless recovery thing that you and I saw back in 2002 and 2003.
Right.
But there are other issues out there, Joan. The commercial real estate is in a slide. What does Kipling have to say about that?
Well, we say that on average, property values have gone down about 35% over 2 years, and we say they're still going down.
Yeah. And Joan, here's how that manifests. I've seen numbers anywhere from $800 billion to $1 trillion in real estate assets, in real estate loans that are going to be resetting in the next 12 months.
Wow.
We've reported on that, and they're going to have to go somewhere, but there's nowhere for them to go.
Right.
Nobody's going to take on that new debt.
That's the problem.
Because of what you just said about the values going down,
right.
35%. Mm-hmm. These are real estate properties, commercial properties that are upside, what the car dealers call upside down.
Right.
There's more owed on them than they're worth.
That's right.
Never mind, 50, 70, 80% debt to equity ratio. They're upside down.
Yeah.
Joan, I had a construction CEO on my show a couple of weeks ago, and he said he didn't see any commercial real estate being built for maybe 3 years.
Wow.
But I also had a banker on earlier this week who said he thought that we were going to be able to absorb, the economy and the banking system was going to successfully absorb those commercial resets.
Really?
Yeah. And I think he meant because we know about them, we got time, they're not going to surprise us like the 08 stuff did.
Yeah.
And basically, for commercial real estate is the kind of thing, Joan, that people will come out of the woodwork to try to take advantage of opportunities.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
See what I mean? So there'll be buyers and sellers there.
Yeah.
But somebody's going to take the hit. Somebody's going to take the hit, and so that will be absorbed. But that is going to be another, as you point out, that is one of the other downward pressures on the economy. The credit market, Joan, is still remaining tough, isn't it?
That's true. We say it's far from normal. It's a normal market that we say is in the distant future, and we still say that banks remain leery of lending to small firms, especially those tied to housing.
Right. Exactly. And Joan, on the credit side, on the credit market, there are two issues there. One is the contracting credit facilities, credit available to consumers, but also consumers have reset their attitudes about debt.
Right.
and they're not using it like they were. And even if they had it, I'm not sure that they would use it as much as they had.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've got that whole thing. So those are a number of issues. Some also home mortgage foreclosures. That's another issue that's going on. Joan, what you guys talk about that? That's going to push home prices even lower.
Yeah, we say more an additional decline of about 10%, and then leveling off mid-year next year.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, and bankruptcies. We've got a lot of personal bankruptcies going on right now, Joan.
Sure.
So, 2010. Everybody that I talk to, Joan, says that 2010 is going to be another year. Not as bad as 2009. But still, we're still gonna realize that we're in a recovery mode, and so folks, that again, that's what that means for us, is that things are getting better, but we can't let up. We still have to keep our nose down and keep our operations tight. 22, right back after these messages with Joan Pryor. We've got more to come. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. That's Sweet Baby James bringing us back, Brother James Taylor. I'm Jim Blassingame. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. We got lots of stuff there that you can do. Kiplinger has an outstanding website, folks, which I encourage you to check out, kiplinger.com. Joan Pride is with us, and she's senior editor there at Kiplinger. And Joan, the publications, including the one we work off of every week, the Kiplinger Letter, has been around now for 86 years.
You bet.
86 years, mm-hmm. folks. Family-owned, small business, financial publication, business publication, unique in the world in what they do. And of course, you've got three biweekly letters, the Agriculture Letter, the Tax Letter, and also the Biofuels Letter.
Yes.
And then of course you got that magazine thing.
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine,
which is also available at newsstands.
That's right.
And I bet you got a phone number too, don't you, Joe?
Our phone number is 800-544-0155.
How did I know that?
Heard it for 11 years.
12 almost. And yeah. Folks, also don't forget the 30-day free trial. But Kiplinger's website is outstanding. Use that when you get a chance.
And it's just been redesigned. It looks even better.
I know. It's great. So, Joan, let's move over and talk about the legislative odds. Now, here's something that we have to couch everything on this list against what happened this week.
Right.
Don't we? Tell the audience what happened.
Well, Republicans won two state houses in New Jersey and my state of Virginia.
Incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, we saw it coming in Virginia. We kind of knew it was going to happen.
Yeah,
New Jersey race was very close.
That was the shocker, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I thought Corzine, the Democratic governor, was behind through the whole campaign and then started to close the gap toward the end, and then it became too close to call, but the Republicans still won.
Well,
in that case, you're unseating a sitting governor.
Yeah.
In Virginia, we have this stupid situation where you can't run for re-election.
Right. There's no incumbent.
So you never have an incumbent in the election.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a dumb rule. They need to change that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you actually get a good one, then
you lose them.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you get
a bad one, the election, the cycle, the process will get rid of a bad one.
Well, right. And the day after you win, you're a lame duck. There should be an accountability process where the people can vote you up or down one more time.
Yeah. That's too hard on the system, I think.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. But anyway, the thing here is you guys say that there's a 3-2 chance that there'll be a health care overhaul. But I'm not so, Joan, I don't think that's going to happen now.
You think that nothing might happen?
I think nothing this year. If there's a God in heaven, did I really say that? Yeah.
Well, we say not before December.
Right.
I think we probably should have said not before January.
No, I think your odds are correct here. They just were made before the Tuesday elections.
Yeah.
I think you guys would call it differently now.
Well, how would you call it now?
I would call it now like I would call it a 1-3 chance. This year, you guys say
this
three.
Year.
You guys say 3-2 that it will happen. Yeah. I say 1-3 chance that it will happen.
Yeah, I see.
That's the most. And I think it may even be a 1 in 5 chance. I mean, even less than that. Because I think that, I think the energy, the cap and trade bill, I think a lot of these things that you guys have on the table here, I think they're going to have to go rethink their, because the polls show that people weren't interested in these things.
That's right.
In those two gubernatorial elections. So I think that's the momentum really shifted. That, let me put it this way. President Obama had a bad day on Tuesday.
He sure did.
He had a bad day on Tuesday. Okay, but John, let's move over and talk about energy.
Well, I think to be fair, though, we need to talk about the New York 23rd District.
Okay.
Which went Democrat for, I think, the first time in, what, a million years?
No, it was like 900,000 years.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Let's get this correct.
And it was a strange race because you had a Democrat, a Republican, and someone from the conservative party.
Right.
And Republicans said the Republican had been pressured to quit the race, which she ended up doing.
But she took enough votes, even though she was out. She took enough votes to move, to change the, to affect the election.
Well, because she threw her support behind the Democrat.
Right, right.
But the conservative was supported by the Republican Party.
I know. That was a weird one.
That district. It was very strange, but it was interesting.
But Joan, I will tell you, I promise you, even if the conservative had have won. Even if the guy had beaten the Democrat, I would still have said that's inconsequential. I really think district in one state is not an indication of anything.
That's true, but I also think the same argument could be made in Virginia because I think you had a bad candidate that we kind of knew all along was going to win anyway.
But it still doesn't change the fact. The thing that I'm most interested in, Joan, is this, and this is not about ideology or politics, about our anybody's political slant. But I just think that it's going to be interesting to see how those two gubernatorial elections are going to affect the public policy debates that are going on.
The way
now.
People behave.
Yeah. I mean, you got to know that. You got to look at that and say, boy, that's interesting how that happened.
Yeah, that's true.
And it brings me back to something Steve Forbes told us once on the show. I was asking him about how he thought the election was going to go. I don't remember which election it was. Probably the 04 election. And he said, well, I remember what Prime Minister Chamberlain was going along one day in his car, you know, 60, 70 years ago, and one of his aides says, "What do you think's what do you think's gonna happen with the election?" You know, he said, "Events, my dear boy, events."
Oh yeah.
And so that's what's happened. You know, these events have happened, and it's what makes politics so interesting.
Right.
Quick break. More to come after these messages. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blasingame. Joan Pryde is our guest.
Tell me a secret. Tell me a lie. Tell me the truth if you have to. Say what you see fit, but don't ask me why. Love never seems to last you.
As I walk along, I wonder what went. Little Del Shannon. Bringing us back, 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan, you're a big Del Shannon fan, aren't you?
Who's that?
Joan Pryde, ladies and gentlemen. She knows. She's just being coy. Hey, Joan, there's some news on the 401k front. Tell us about it.
Well, something that employers need to watch out for, public employers anyway, that workers, a lot of workers haven't gotten the memo. They're still putting too much of their 401k account into the company stock.
Mm.
And employers are actually working on trying to get employees to diversify out of
even after
stock.
Even after Enron, they're still doing that, huh?
So if they're too much into company stock, it's not the employer's fault anymore because they're not allowed to force it.
Right. Well, they used to force that. When I was at Sears,
yes,
back in the early 70s, 100% of our retirement that the company contributed had to go towards buying stock. And
yeah,
they got to decide during the year when to buy that stock for us. And it was always when it was the highest.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
No.
And then the other thing we're saying in this section is if you've got someone who does the books, a record keeper, a company that you bring in to do all that back office stuff, every few years you need to reevaluate and see if you can get a better deal somewhere else because often you can.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. It's like a fiduciary duty you have to make sure that you're getting the best, lowest cost service that you can.
Well, see, that's kind of the way we do our insurance around here.
Yeah.
You know, we do the research on finding the best company, the best price, and what we need, and then we live with them for a couple of years. We don't really worry about it for a couple of years. Then after a couple, maybe 3 years, we go through the process again just to keep them honest.
Sure. Yeah.
And then sometimes we change.
That's what you got to do.
So you're saying it's one of those things you don't have to evaluate every year. You just kind of need to check the position.
The average company will reevaluate every 6 to 8 years.
Oh, 6 to 8. Okay, so you can go out a little farther.
Yeah.
But I think you still ought to have some kind of an interim due diligence just to sort of check
your
position.
It's just that it's a lot of upheaval if you're changing every couple of years.
Yeah, it's a lot different changing your 401k manager than changing an insurance policy.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, so I see what you're saying. Anything else there on the 401k front?
No, I think that pretty much takes care of it.
Let's move up and talk about energy, Joan. You know, one of the things that we've been doing over the years is wringing our hands over the oil fields that are in the northern parts of the planet.
Right.
You know, up in the tundra area.
Yep.
And you know, that's kind of the closer you get up to the North Pole, Joan, it gets smaller and smaller up there.
That's right.
You know? And, you know, my head's smaller than my girth is, Joan. And so, and we got three primary interested parties in that oil: Canada, the U.S., and Russia.
Right.
In the oil.
We say they're jostling.
And the natural gas. You guys reported on that this week, didn't you?
Yeah. They're jostling. I like this. They're jostling in the frigid Arctic.
Yeah.
They're all trying to stake claims.
Well, and the thing is, Joan, is, you know, those underground caches of oil and gas don't really understand anything about boundaries, do they?
Absolutely not.
So if we stick a hole in the ground in Alaska, Joan, mm-hmm. and that hole ultimately connects over under Canada and Russia, if we suck the oil out of there first, we get the oil.
Yep, nothing can do about it.
And they do, too.
Well, and the same holds true for them.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly. So this is yet another reason, Joan, that the United States needs to get up there and start drilling in Anwar.
That's right. Oh, no.
Yes, yeah. I got you there, didn't I?
Oh, you did.
Yeah. See, you heard her, folks. You heard her agree with me.
Yeah, but then I realized I had this vision of Bambi in my head.
I know.
And I realized that's wrong.
And so, folks, here's the thing. Anwar is about 2,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they want to drill, about 2,000 acres. The tundra, the Alaskan tundra, is millions of acres.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a big deal. So we need to get up there and get this oil. We need the oil.
Yeah, who cares about Bambi?
Well, I care about Bambi, Joan.
Not
you know
enough.
I care about Bambi.
Not enough.
But Bambi's going to be fine. So all Bambi's mother has to do is say, okay, Bambi, just don't go over there.
And you
go
know
over
what happened
here.
To Bambi's mother? She was killed.
Now, I think his dad was killed, wasn't it? Was it?
Oh, I don't know.
I've forgotten. Anyway.
Yeah.
But that was even, and we didn't get any oil out of it. She still died. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
It's always a pleasure. Joan Pryde, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She'll be back, I promise. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Before I do, folks, I want to remind all of us that it's not on the front pages all the time. It's not always in the news. A lot of the politics is primarily the news. But while all this stuff is going on, remember that we got men and women standing a post in harm's way in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Let's never forget them. These are brave heroes, brave patriots. God bless them. God be with them. We are proud of them.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.